The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by L. Alpovorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged Surfside iced tea and vodka from Stateside Vodka and Kinetic Skateboarding. Get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show today, Sixers drop a tough one in game four at home, go down to the Knicks 3-1 and are in a precarious position on the verge of being eliminated in the first round of the NBA playoffs. I did mention Surfside. Stateside decided to make the most cursed bottle of vodka of all time. You simply cannot not get this cursed bottle of vodka that has the year on it. There's only 1,000 of them. You can put it in your liquor cabinet and look at it years later and think to yourself, wow, what a dumb fuck I was to believe that this was the year. We will put a link in the show notes. You can get it at statesidevodka.com. It's a cool fucking looking bottle. The black is matte black. The gold is like gold foil. It's an amazing looking bottle, but it is cursed. So don't let anybody touch it. And Kinetic Skateboarding, I did mention 9.1% off for your first order at kineticskateboarding.com. If it is with code Dave Silver, they do have these. I always mention they've got sneakers that you're not going to get anywhere else. The DC Truth OGs in blue and red, which look like, if you look at the tongue, if you go to the other picture, CJ, look at the tongue. You see that? Looks familiar, right? Looks like that old Sixers logo. These are pretty dope. I'm obviously not a skateboarder, but I would wear these. I would get called a poser. Go to kineticskateboarding.com and use code Dave Silver for 9.1% off your first order. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. Wait, no. I don't even know how to start the podcast. I'm Spike. That's Mike. His eyes are glazed over. He is in a hotel room. Sixers are down 3-1.
I'm in San Diego. Got the Phils two wins the last 2 days.
Oh, that was thank nice. You for that. Thank you. Are you responsible for the Bohm heater,
I assume? More Ranger, but I feel like okay. I at least contributed a little bit to Bohm. Last time I watched this playoff game in a hotel room was the Eagles Super Bowl, so I was hoping that would the good Eagles Super Bowl.
Yes.
I thought that would help, but it
didn't.
Embarrassing once again. Sixers embarrassing us. Just not a serious basketball team. Once again, beat on the offensive glass. Over and over and over again, beat on the offensive glass. They're slow to every ball. They have bad hands. They don't want it as much. They're unathletic. They're not keyed in with each other. Just like over and over again, the Knicks are the team that is more athletic and gets to every ball. They had 15 offensive rebounds. The Sixers shot 35% from the floor. They played prevent offense and kneel downs in the fourth quarter. Didn't hit a shot the last 5 minutes. A real embarrassment, all the way up and down the roster and the coaching staff. Sucks. Just like fucking sucks, dude. Like those two Josh Hart rebounds to end the third quarter. They just got out muscled and out hustled to every rebound and every loose ball. Like just one of the things that frustrates me the most about this team and has for the last 5-6 years, whatever, is just how slow and unathletic they are. And it seemed like the Knicks had 6 players and the Sixers had 4. Like it just felt that way. And they lost because of it. Obviously, Jalen Brunson played a tremendous game. The guy's unbelievable, hit a ton of tough shots. And at the end of the day, they still only scored 97 points despite having 15 offensive rebounds. He had 47 points. The rest of the team had 50. If you rebound the goddamn basketball and don't have a couple really bad Joel turnovers in the third on some pretty ill-advised passes, which would have been another turnover if Maxey didn't make an incredible play on the baseline or the sideline. Just like, you know, you let them get out in transition, you fail to match up. You let them get offensive rebounds, you fail to box out and grab the goddamn ball and be physical with it. Just like over and over again, the Knicks were the more physical team and they won because of it. Even though the Sixers went to the line more times, they hit more of their foul shots. Like, it's just, it was a really, really embarrassing loss. And it feels like every loss is different and a magical, beautiful snowflake in its own right. But this one at least had the same shape as a bunch of other losses where it's just like bad communication, low IQ plays, Maxey not realizing Lowry was going to miss on purpose, just over and over again. Other teams do the little things. Sixers haven't done the little things, and they lose because of it. It's a really fucking embarrassing loss and probably means the end of the series.
I don't find the loss to be embarrassing, to be honest with you. Like, I don't think that there's anything that we know about them now that we didn't know about them when we were calling it the best team that Embiid's ever had around him, which we did several times this year. It's not a different team than we thought it was coming into the series. It is like on some level, I think they are hurt by the fact that they are sort of assembled, that there are a bunch of guys who have played together very little overall, to be quite honest with you, less than a season for anybody aside from Maxey and Embiid. You know, Embiid played half the year. I don't think I'm making excuses at all. I think like, I think the one player I was sort of, and by the way, the other thing that we knew is that like the Knicks rebound the fuck out of the ball and the Sixers do not. Like, even at Embiid's best, he is an average rebounder for his size. He's pretty good. He is not at his best right now. He hasn't rebounded the ball well since he returned. I don't know what he's averaged, but my guess is it's somewhere around 8 or 9 rebounds a game. And it like, a couple of games, that's a coincidence, but over and over and over again, it's not. I'm just like not surprised about how the game went. I honestly wanted more out of Maxey in the fourth quarter. They stalled offensively because, look, Nurse had a choice to make, and I think it'll get questioned over and over again, but I think he made the right choice with not resting Embiid in the second half. Those non-Embiid minutes were terrible tonight, and he had a choice to make. He said, I can either rest him and risk it, or I can just let him go the whole way. We're down 2-1. Like, I'm going to try this. And at a certain point in the fourth quarter, Embiid was obviously cooked physically. He had nothing left. He was standing in the corner. Yep. And it was at that point, and I hope everyone can handle that, like, I'm being critical of the player, and it doesn't mean I want to trade Tyrese Maxey or that I think he's not good or that I don't think he'll be great. But when Embiid is in that position and it's on you, and they tried to run the offense through Maxey, they did, as the offense struggled in the fourth quarter. They were trying to run it through Maxey and he could not get open. When he got to the rim, it was not as clean as it normally is. And like, I genuinely believe if Maxey has a 12% better game, they win the game. I'm sort of in this place where I go a little bit back to game two in that this series has been, every game has been like this, right? Like, where I'm holding up my fingers very close to each other. Like, every game has been very, very close, has been a fucking anxiety-filled pressure cooker the entire time. It's hard to win the series when you go down 2-0 when all the games are like that. And I keep going back to the end of game two, that if the Sixers come back 1-1, this seems elementary, but if the Sixers come back from that 1-1, then you have a little bit of room for error, and they had no room for error in these two games. And unfortunately, like, a lot of people are criticizing Embiid for not scoring in the fourth. I don't criticize Embiid at all. It wasn't his best game, but he's been tough the entire time, has taken it upon himself to lead the team the entire time. And they just don't, like, in these first four games, they have not had it enough. But it is truly, this series is truly like a hair away from, I'm not saying moving forward, but at this point is a hair away from being 2-2, or honestly, even 3-1 the other way. And
of course, but that, yeah. But like, there's only so many times you can say that over the course of 7 years.
But I don't say that. Like, I haven't said, I understand where you're sick of hearing sure. it, but it's not something that I've said sure. or that I've felt. That's so, fair. You know,
it,
like,
no, I agree with you. And that's a fair point. It's just like, you can't always be the ones that lose these close games. You can't always be the ones to lose these close games. And like, if they don't let up those couple offensive rebounds in the late third quarter, and they get a little bit more offense from guys, and Joel doesn't turn the ball over in pretty embarrassing ways at that point, then you can go like, okay, let's steal 2 minutes of game time without Joel. And whether that means B-ball Paul, or whether that means like, fuck it, let's try to go small and throw a different look at them. It just felt like Daryl always talks about how like the one lever you can pull in the playoffs is playing your best players more. And that is a lever that works for other teams and it doesn't work for us, because the more that Embiid is in,
yes, I agree.
He becomes less effective and he just doesn't make those plays. And even like he gets mentally tired because like they're down, I don't remember what the point, like, you know, a little bit, three or five or something like that. And Embiid presses Jalen Brunson. And that is a decision made out of frustration.
Yeah, I would
when he has no chance of staying with him, almost regularly, you know, regularly 94 feet is tough to pick up a point guard, any point guard, but he's going to do it when he's played 40 some minutes and he's already hobbled, and he does it out of frustration, and he covers him till like the 3-point line. He goes, okay, I'm going to go back to my guy.
But and then there's nobody there. Right.
And he gets a layup out of it. And if he just sits back, then maybe the Sixers still have a shot of winning this game. Obviously they were, you know, it was a 3-point game. If you stop in there, whatever, instead of giving up that easy bucket. I mean, I do think it's really embarrassing because of the sheer amount of, decisions and 50-50 balls that went the other way. And I feel disappointed in Nick Nurse. They got pummeled on the glass in the first game of the series. And Nick goes like, maybe it is just as simple as we got to box out better and go get the ball, but maybe it's not. I got to look at it. And like nothing.
What's he going to do to take
he has not tried anything else.
What could he try?
Try running five out or KJ Martin or play B-ball with him at the same time. B-ball, it was a bad B-ball game for sure, but it's 3 or 4 minutes. And
he was
obviously
terrible.
He was definitely bad,
yeah.
But it was like, try for Ricky Council, who's a fire starter and can like, you know, get something going. It's just there's trade-offs and there's decisions that could lead to other stuff. But it seems like the Knicks had, when Boyan went out after playing one game and 1 minute and Hartenstein goes out, they have like nobody. They're just hanging by a thread. Deuce McBride played an incredible game. He's never missed a shot against the Sixers. It's unbelievable. And they're the team that just like goes and makes the plays, and the Sixers aren't. I just expected a little bit more creativity and juice than I'm just going to leave Joel in. I do think for the most part, it was still a very good Joel game. He had, some great passes in the first half. The full court bounce pass to Tobias was awesome for a dunk.
Even him fouling out Hartenstein in the third quarter.
Yeah, five fouls. Yeah.
Just deciding he didn't foul him out, but you know what I mean?
He
just deciding, I've had enough of this and I'm just going to bait this guy.
But then again, and it feels like that, and this is not backed up by data, but it always feels like when Embiid decides to foul somebody out and then gets a quote unquote easier defender on him, the Sixers role players, when they're not hitting shots, that's a harder matchup for the Sixers, because then the other team knows, well, we think Hartenstein can do a pretty good job of covering him straight up. And sometimes they're right. But we know that Precious Achiuwa can't. So let's put OG Anunoby on him and let's send help. Right. And let's send help from all over the place. And let's double on the bounce or on the catch or whatever it is. And to be able to do that and deny the ball from Maxi and not punish that with role players hitting shots is bad. I mean, Tobias Harris was 0-for-1 from 3 in this game. 0 for 1. The bench as a whole, aside from those, the campaign three and the campaign floater, did not hit a shot. And it's just too many guys not being shooting threats. Even like the end of that, the possession that end with Precious blocking Embiid's three for a shot clock violation. Lowry had a shot, could have gone up with it, but decided to make the extra pass, and then Embiid had to shoot it. It's just like too many guys, even Melton, who was, you know, good for him for playing. It was nice seeing him out there. He missed both of his threes and kind of didn't make an impact on the defensive end. But like, even just him being willing to shoot that quickly and pull up and shoot it off the catch, it was a breath of fresh air. Tobias gets an opportunity at the end. There was no chance he was making that corner three. There was not a chance in fucking hell, in any universe, in any fucking multiverse, Tobias Harris misses that three. And as the game got more physical, Tobias got more useless. He had a nice start to the game. They try to get him the ball in like easy positions, let him seal inside. He had a nice downhill finish in like transition where he uses off arm to fend off Ananobi. But like, then the game gets physical and anybody nearby him, he's not getting that rebound. He's just not. And over and over again, Tobias being like, oh, his fingertips, he just missed it. The amount of times that it's Tobias, Maxi had it a couple times, Batum had it a couple times, and Embiid partly because of how taxed he was, watching rebounds fall and watching the Knicks get it. Like, you see a Sixers shot go up and everybody's getting back in transition, which I understand because the Knicks pummel them in transition and their half-court defense is pretty good. Even when Brunson goes off as much as he did, their half-court defense is still pretty good. But the Knicks put a shot up, and it's like, how are they allowed to have seven guys out there? Josh Hart getting to everything. He finishes with 17 rebounds, 5 offensive. Ananobi, 14 rebounds. They get out-rebounded 52-42. I mean, sometimes it's that simple. Embiid is the best player in the series, even though he's hurt. Maxi for a while has been the second best. Brunson obviously took that over tonight, but to just not have enough guys and for Daryl to not have gotten enough guys and for Nick Nurse to not have trusted enough guys where you can go, okay, we have counters to some of these more athletic teams and we can meet them at this point and not just go, hey, box out. It's a failure on every level. It is. And you know, I don't blame any one person individually. I agree with you that I think Maxi took himself out of the game too much. The Knicks did a good job of denying him the ball. It was pretty much a non-factor offensively in the first quarter. They had a couple in the fourth.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like he had a couple great plays. He still finished with 23 points on 21 shots, six rebounds, 6 assists, 1 turnover. Like, he's still a good player. Like, him being out there, 3 of 9 from 3, pretty nice. A lot of step backs. Had a good drive and dump off to Oubre in the dunker spot late. But the Knicks packed the paint on him, and I don't even think he took a floater in this one, except for that baseline and one finish around Brunson when he did a nice job avoiding him when he was trying to take a charge. But Maxi, because of how ferocious and athletic the Knicks were around the rim defensively, I think he only hit one layup, and that's not common for him. And if they're going to do that, whether it's double Embiid or pack the paint on him or send help on Maxi, then it's got to be somebody else making him pay off a kickout. And sometimes they did that, but they shot 9 of 33 from three. I mean, Tobias took 1 3 in that game in 34 minutes. He took 1 3. They keep leaving him wide open and he just can't make him.
Well, I mean, he's been atrocious for 2.5 months now. Yeah. I mean, like he's been waiting to leave for 2.5 months. There was actually one point at which there was a ball right in front of him that I was dying for him to get on the ground and get. Yeah. And he looked relieved that Paul Reed got in the way so he couldn't dive after
and
it.
So many of those kind of miscommunications, like ball just tipping out. It's just like, somebody just grab the motherfucking ball and like grow up. Like, don't look around, just fucking grab it and squeeze it. And like, don't let anybody take it from you. And the Knicks do that all the time. And the Sixers are like playing fucking volleyball with their fingertips. And it's brutal. And Tobias also defensively had a couple nice possessions on Brunson. Obviously Brunson made some tough fucking shots on him and he got him to bite. Like, I don't even hold that against him. He did a pretty decent job.
Fine on Brunson.
Pretty decent job. Yeah. I'd obviously rather have Batum or Oubre on Brunson. But when Tobias got switched on to him, I thought he did like a fine job. But you cannot over and over again get cooked on straight line drives by OG Ananobi. You can't. You can't. And he did over and over again. He got out physicaled. OG would like do a little bit of like a chicken wing push off, and then Tobias would fall back and have like, it would take him, you'd need like a crane to have to pluck him off the ground to see if he can contest that shot. It takes so long for him, his body to move to then like recover and contest. It's bad. And then those Embiidless minutes, like obviously Paul was bad. Paul was very bad. Called his own number a couple times too many. Missed a few that he normally hits.
He lost,
had a nice block on Achiuwa, but that
he lost the mental battles that he has to have every game. He lost them a couple of times.
For sure. But like Tobias needs to like do something, and it can't be the like, okay, here's overly cautious Tobias getting ready, and it's like the shot clock's winding down and you're going to take a step back 19 footer with two guys coming over. And it's just like, God, he gets so easily bumped off his spot and out physical. And I'm so excited for him to not be on the team anymore. ultimately, It was a full team loss, a true full team loss. And you can blame like shooting variance. Like Maxi had one wide open three that I'm like, he always makes this shot, and he didn't. And sometimes that happens. Oubre was 3 of 7 from deep. I thought he played a pretty nice game offensively. Just doesn't seem like they have enough guys when the Knicks are hitting their shots and crashing the glass as much as they are.
The Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by L.L. Pavorsky Jewelers, the very first sponsor of the Ricky. In this show of bad news, one piece of good news is that this week L.L. has sold engagement rings number 399 and 400 to Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners. That's right. 400 engagement rings over the last 6 years, something like that. And that tells you one thing. That we are undercharging LL for the advertising. But it also tells you that LL is a guy who people keep depending on and are always happy to go to for something like that. Like every single listener who has gone to LL, who we have heard from for an engagement ring, has come back absolutely positively thrilled with the product, thrilled with the experience, thrilled with the price, thrilled with the guy, all that stuff. He makes the process of buying an engagement ring very low stress and very personal. Some say even too personal. He wants an appointment with you rather than you just walking in, and he wants to do that so he makes sure he can give you all the time you need, also collect whatever information he needs to before you come in so he can have stuff for you to look at when you come in. Just a gentleman, a scholar, and well, I don't know if he's a scholar, but definitely a gentleman. Been at the same spot at 707 Walnut for 36 years. If you would like an engagement ring, make an appointment, 215-627-2252. That's 215-627-2252. Send an email to Lee at llpavorsky.com. Tweet at him at llpavorsky. He is a supporter of our charities, the Providence Animal Center and Mama T's Community Fridge, LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
400 engagements is going to have to be our conference finals.
Yeah. So I agree the sort of on everyone from Daryl to Nurse to the players and so on and so forth. It is hard to parse all of it without, I think, understanding which you understand, but understand. And I feel like I'm an excuse maker. And I've never been this before, but I feel like the context of everything is incredibly important when we talk about a team that has played together very little. And I think that is a thing that of course makes it harder for Nurse and harder for the players, by the way, through a situation that I would say that is probably suboptimal and not something they planned on. The Harden thing happening changed the core of the team. Now you could go back and say Daryl should have known that was going to happen, and maybe he should have, but it did happen, and it forced them basically to change how their entire team played from last year to this year, 2 weeks into the season. I think Embiid missing that middle part of the season also sort of, and Mike O'Connor touched on this in one of his articles, and I don't know what more he could have done, is that like he went into the trade deadline, I think, unsure of whether if they had gone into the trade deadline with Embiid playing like he was playing before he got hurt, I think you can obviously be far more aggressive at that point than they were. Trading 2 seconds for Buddy Hield and then getting a second back or whatever for Patrick Beverley or whatever it was, I think, was a hedge at the trade deadline, and it ended up hurting them in this situation. But if I were in his position, I don't know what I would have done. And then when it comes to like adjustments that Nurse has to make, I think on some level, and I used to say this about Brett all the time, on some level, he's only dealing with the people that are there. And when every game is like basically a one or two possession game coming down the stretch, it's very hard to do something that you haven't done all year or put a guy in the game who was a two-way player until the final game of the season. Like, to sure,
there's just got to be another ant. There's got to be, you got to try something. Deuce McBride was barely in the rotation this year, and he's hitting big shots. I mean, Mitch Robinson's out for the game, doesn't play. Isaiah Hartenstein gets in foul trouble, doesn't play in the fourth quarter.
But Precious Achiuwa has played a ton this year.
Yeah, and he's not, I like him, but like Knicks fans, he's not like the game breaker. He's not like, we got Achiuwa, like we're locked in.
He's played well all year. They didn't take some guy who had not played all year and put him in the game.
It's still like, inexcusable. Regardless of what, they have excuses. Boyan gets hurt. Like, everybody has excuses. There's all plenty of reasons. And like the Knicks had, this is Harala Bob tweeting, retweeting Mike O'Connor. The Knicks had a 73% offensive rebounding rate in the 32 offensive possessions with Hartenstein off the floor. The Knicks closed with a 6'1", 6'1", 6'4", 6'8", and 6'8" lineup. They're not like Minnesota out there. There's just a lack of going and getting the fucking ball, and a lack of like being athletic enough and physical enough and like locked in enough and engaged enough, all of it, to make those plays. And then that on top of, you know, missed bunnies or getting out physical to everywhere else. Like, I really don't understand Joel passing up a wide open jumper and then going in for like a reverse and inviting the defense. It's horrible decision making on his part, which happens when you're you know, playing more minutes than you ever have and you're overtaxed.
I also wonder if he knew he didn't have a jumper in him at that point. Like, the two things I thought about looking at that were,
it was a 12 footer. I think he was just like, oh, I'm just going to dunk. But he then like didn't have the,
or he
just
was
fucked
trying
it up
to get an N1 or something.
Yeah. He just fucked it up.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. It just sucks, man. It just fucking sucks, dude. And he's still obviously a very good player. And I thought like he hit a floater and a hook shot, and he looked great spinning and shooting over either shoulder with Hartenstein on him rather than Mitch. I mean, his touch was great for a lot of the game. And then like, as has happened over the course of these playoffs so far, maybe it was when he like stepped on Josh Hart or he rolled over Brunson or whatever. Like, he didn't have that lift and explosiveness in the third and fourth quarter, and they, you know, they did a good job. I don't think they let up an offensive rebound in the first quarter, and then the second they started getting some, and then obviously in the third and the fourth it just came crashing down, and it just too. So often get a couple stops forcing tough shots. You force this tough shot, you make it hard on him, whatever. You just got to close out a fucking possession. And then and then that gives Brunson so many more opportunities. Like, he obviously played very, very good, but he didn't shoot like 20 of 25. Like, he was 18 of 34. He's only 2 of 8 from three. Like, you make it hard for other guys. The Knicks were 7 of 27 from three on the game. And you just got to fucking rebound the goddamn ball. You got to get to some loose balls. You can't give it up like that. And they just so easily just had like lackadaisical effort. And whether that's conditioning or just personnel or whatever, you just wish that, you know, obviously a coach can only do so much, but I didn't see the sort of, aside from, you know, regular play calls that he does, like, you know, over the course of a game, like, I'm not saying he did nothing, but I didn't see that like, here's my ace in the hole that we're going to play to try something for Nick Nurse. Because they just kept getting beat the same way. It was just over and over again, the guys that are out there. It is especially annoying that like opening night of this season, Drew covers Embiid. And I guess it wouldn't have been opening night. First,
oh no,
because it's Sixers Celtics. So it would have been the first time that the Sixers played the Celtics this year. Drew covers Embiid, and you're like, oh, that's interesting. That's good. I remember saying on this podcast, that's good for him to see that, because they're going to try so many different ways to stop him. And here comes OG Anunoby, who is obviously a bigger, longer defender, can switch 1 through 5 and all that stuff. But like, He's not big enough to cover Joel. He shouldn't be big enough to cover Joel. And he doesn't get enough good looks. His teammates don't get him the ball enough in the right places. And certainly his teammates don't make enough shots around him to make them pay for doubling. You got to punish that help, and they didn't. And then on top of the, like, you know, some unforced errors like Embiid pushing full court for really no reason whatsoever. Him going like 1-on-3. It's just not necessary sometimes, but he's still incredible, dude. He fucking, you know, incredible around the rim, altered so many shots.
I have no problem with overall with Embiid in this game. He didn't play a perfect game,
sure,
but
of course,
he was, yeah, he was,
but because of the, you just got to know that, like, if he's not 100%, the first thing that's going to go, the number one thing for Joel that's going to go is rebounding. When he's not 100%, when he can't explode.
But you
off
keep
of
saying
it.
This. So
Nick's just got to, he's got to try something else. But it can't be like Tobias, just like go get him. Rivers clip of like, come on, guys. Like, that's basically what it is.
I understand the frustration. I do.
Very, very frustrated.
I am as frustrated. My position on this is the Knicks have good rebounders and the Sixers do not. Like, end of story. The Knicks have been a good offensive rebounding team all year long.
But rebounding is a different skill than just shooting. You're right. But rebounding is a different skill than just shooting, where it's like, I have good touch from the perimeter or whatever. It is a mindset. And if you're going to attack the offensive glass, if the other team is going to attack the offensive glass, then they are giving up some stuff in transition. And if you can squeeze those rebounds and then you have 3-on-2 runouts, then you can make them pay and make them second guess often crashing the glass as much as they do. And they just didn't. And that's not entirely on Nick Nurse. It's not entirely on Joel. It's not entirely on Daryl, but some collection of those guys and the role players on this team had to do something to stop it. And for the third time this series, in big fucking moments, the Sixers got absolutely brutalized on the offensive glass and in 50-50 ball physicality moments that they just like came up short again because they didn't have the effort. They didn't have the focus to stop the Knicks from getting exactly what they wanted. And then finally Jalen Brunson got hot and he made him pay enough, but even they should have won this game. They still should have won this game. Jalen Brunson should have scored 47 points and the Sixers win this game. I mean, it's just, he was incredible. Guy's the man. Love watching him play when he's not playing the Sixers. But like, they should have won this game despite that. And they didn't because of their effort in almost every other facet of the game.
I just don't think they're good rebounders. I think it's a bad rebounding team against a good rebounding team. Like it sucks. I whittled this game truly down to they needed more from Maxey. That is what I, what's it called? That is what I feel on the game. I like nothing about this game surprised me. The series has been pretty much exactly how I figured. I just felt like at the end of the day, what we would get from Embiid and Maxey would overcome the deficiencies that we have in exactly what we're seeing. We didn't get enough from Maxey on this one. I personally do not think that there's anything Nick Nurse can do at this point to turn the Sixers into a team that can stop the Knicks from offensive rebounding. Like, he can yell at Tobias. People, fans have been yelling at Tobias for 5 years. Hasn't really
changed. Then take him out and try to put somebody else in. Like, he's not doing anything.
Who?
KJ Martin, Ricky Council, anybody that's going to like elevate and be physical.
But do you understand?
Try something. The futility of this happening over and over and over and over again through four games.
But
like,
do you
has
understand
to
the futility of saying that the thing that is going to save us is a fucking two-way guy?
Absolutely. And then that's the fault of Daryl. And Daryl needs to be better of getting guys that could be playable here. And obviously some of it is D'Anthony Melton's not healthy, hasn't been in the rotation for a few months because of his injury. Covington's been out for forever. Like, those kinds of guys would have made some difference here. It's a small ball lineup you could have played if you don't trust B-ball or whatever and make him guard five out, whatever it is. But like, that's why I'm not blaming anyone individually, but like, it is so many things. And I can't just shrug my shoulders and go like, they're not a good rebounding team. Hope they hit enough shots. It just, there has to be more. I know that the Sixers like video room and the assistant coaches are fucking grinding and thinking about like, how can we make up for our team's mistakes? Just like the Knicks are. How can we make up for the things that our team is not good at? Like, for example, Nick Batum denies Jalen Brunson the ball in the half court. And then it becomes a Deuce McBride, presses Achiuwa pick and roll. And you're obviously, as a Sixers, fucking fine with that. Thank you so much. Go run one. Deuce throws the ball away. Turnover. And the Knicks coaching staff, front office, video coordinators, whatever, all know like, okay, Jalen's going to have to do everything, or we're going to have to beat them in transition. And so often, this is now the fourth game in a row I'm saying this, the Sixers bleed points in transition because they communicate, they don't match up. Part of that is, yes, they haven't played together as much. Some of these guys haven't. But like at a certain point, you just got to like do it. You just got to pick up a fucking man. That's just basketball. You pick up a man. And when you're just not seeing the floor and calling it out or whatever, then you're not playing good basketball. And the Knicks have made this, despite the fact that the Knicks half court offense for the most part of this series has been pretty bad or limited to Jalen, go do something. The Knicks have taken a 3-1 lead because the Sixers have not punished the Knicks' weaknesses the way that the Knicks have punished the Sixers' weaknesses.
I agree with that part. I agree with that part. I agree that the Sixers have not punished the Knicks' weaknesses the same way that the Knicks have punished the Sixers' weaknesses. I agree there. I don't want to beat to death the same points. The series has gone exactly like the teams look exactly the way I figured. I think overall Embiid has been better than I would have guessed given health, all that kind of stuff. I don't know what else to say. The team is the team, and I think one thing that I think is sort of a detriment for next year is going to be a completely new team again, is my guess.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have to do all this again. When you look in the history of the NBA, there's not a lot of completely new teams that go on and win a championship the first year that they're together. Even the LeBron Heat did not win a championship the first year that they're together.
And that's the thing that Daryl tends to not care about as a general manager.
And I think he's wrong.
Yeah,
I think he's wrong on that one. Now, I also think there are some, he has historically not cared about that. I think there are extenuating circumstances in this particular team being that way over the last 3-4 years, given what's happened with Ben, what's happened to Harden, all that kind of stuff. But by and large, like we're going to go into next year. And there's obviously still, like, I don't think it's impossible that the Sixers win on Tuesday night and it comes back to Philly and yada, yada, yada. But going into next year, it's probably going to be a completely different team again. And that's tough. That's tough. You know, like the entire Embiid era, I feel like from one year to the next, we've rarely seen, the same team year after year. And I think that it's tough to try to win that way. But at least Tobias is done at the end of the year. So
at least Tobias is done. Yeah. I should say like all, you know, we've had the same argument over and over again about me saying like, please don't let Josh Hart take 8 wide open threes, which the first three games he made 4 in each of the first three games. They decide to cover him a little bit more. He only had, I think, 1 3-point attempt in the first half. He finishes 0-for-3. He doesn't make a shot in the game. Has 17 rebounds still, 5 assists, 3 blocks, plays almost the entire game despite having 5 fouls. And they essentially play, Embiid was a little bit too deep in drop early on with Brunson and just letting him step into those. And if he's going to do that, then you really need Oubre or Batum or Tobias or whoever it is to fight around that fucking screen quicker and not just let him step into it like super easy and be adjusted. But they did it the way that I wanted them to do it.
And Jalen Brunson had almost 50
Jalen Brunson
points.
Had 47 and they still should have won.
Well, but they still should have won games 1 and 2 as well.
For sure. But that's fair. I mean, look, we've had the conversation. This is the way I would rather do it. I think that they could have covered him. I think they could have contested better. I think they could have played more disciplined defense and stuff. It's not simple to like do this, do that. But I just tend to like defense that doesn't result in a good player, even if he's not necessarily known as a shooter, taking those wide open shots. Brunson like made me pay for that in this game. Absolutely. And if you rebound, then you go, then the takeaway of this game is, if you rebound, if you limited them to 10 offensive rebounds instead of 15, then the takeaway is, okay, Brunson's going to have to do it all himself. And by the way, I don't think they attacked him enough on the defensive end. I would have gone at him way more. And the Knicks did a good job of hiding him and doubling and all that stuff. And the Sixers didn't do a good job of punishing that. But if they had won this game and they'd only allowed 10 offensive rebounds, then the takeaway is, okay, Brunson can still get his, and the Knicks don't have enough juice outside of him to win this game. They scored 97 points. They shot 7 of 27 from three. Brunson himself was 2 of 8 from three. Like, they didn't play a great game.
But every game was like this. Every game was just this close. Every game was just like...
The offenses were better. Both offenses were better in game three.
Absolutely. Well, and part of that was Embiid on a legendary heater for the Sixers. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Maxey was great in game two. And Maxey was not great in this game. Yeah. I sort of at an impasse with... You have to pick one of them.
You have to pick one of them.
Yeah.
And this is the one that I would rather pick. But I think the benefit especially... is they were still giving up the offensive rebounds even though they weren't covering Josh Hart. And now it's like, well, theoretically, if you're covering him now, you can box him out. And they didn't. That's just like a team-wide issue. It's very frustrating. It's very, very frustrating. If you're not covering him and he can just like, you know, attack the offensive glass however he wants, then fine. But like, man, they... just over and over again, the same issue. And they are bad at it, but like, I just wish it was, I wish you could see more of a, see it reflected more that like Nick Nurse believes it as big of an issue by like his personnel, what he's doing out there. And I'm not seeing that. I think he just sort of assumes like, well, we got a rebound. And that's true, obviously, but that also hasn't worked, you know, saying we got a rebound. It works for like a quarter. And you go like, man, they're really getting after it. The Knicks aren't doing it. But over time, they wear you down with physicality. The Knicks don't get tired. The Sixers do. Their athleticism wins out almost always. And I would like to see some reaction to that. That's not just Doc Rivers meme on the bench. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I think the reaction to that is a personnel issue and less a Nurse issue. But
it's all of it, for sure.
Well, so game five is on Tuesday. Yeah. I don't know. I hope they win game five.
Yeah. I mean,
Like this series is honestly the most frustrating thing about this series is every game has been there for them. Yep. in a way that we've had the close series that we lose. And you look at the score and you feel like it's been there, but sure. I feel like it hasn't been there.
Yeah.
This time I feel like every fucking game has been there and they are a shot or two, or in the case of game two, one un-brain dead decision away from winning it. But like, that's the difference between winners and losers. And that's the situation that they're in. But again,
and that's been the case for years. And I know that you thought like, well, you're less like they should have won those games, whether it's Toronto, you know, game four against Toronto, as far as the Celtics series that they lost a gentleman sweep in five, their first playoff run, which like, man, close games that they could have had if like Embiid didn't miss the shot with Horford on him, or if JJ didn't make this pass to no one, like whatever, those kinds of little plays all in there. It's like, it always seems to go against the Sixers. And at a certain point, the combination of guys, maybe continuity should play more of a factor and that should be more considered because of how many years we can go like, well, they just haven't played with each other that much. And then at the end of the day, you look at Embiid as well. It is obviously the role players have failed them, and the front office, all iterations of the front office have not done a good enough job surrounding Embiid with the guys he needs. I think if everyone was healthy, that this would still be that team, Melton and Covington. Tough that they're not. But other teams bounce back from those injuries, and the Sixers are not. And so,
well, and the Knicks have bounced back from those injuries. Like Ananobi got traded for at the deadline, or you know, 2 weeks before the deadline, and missed a ton of time.
Absolutely.
You know, to your point, McBride did not play a lot for much of the year. You know, Mitchell Robinson was in and out.
Yep.
Like Randall's not there, which I think makes them better anyway. But that said, and the Sixers have not dealt with it well at all. But all that said, like, they're a Tuesday win away from me thinking they can win this series.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, so.
But it's not like you can feel great about like home court advantage
no,
at any point.
No. And for all of the people that complain, first of all, the number of people complaining about the way it sounds who did not buy tickets, like, the only people who are allowed to complain about that are the people who bought tickets. If you did not go to the game, then you can shut the fuck up about Philly fans selling their tickets. This team is that the franchise's failures over the last 7 years are the reason that people sell their tickets. Full stop. If this was a team that everyone believed in, there would still be Knicks fans there because they'd be willing to pay a premium, and there would be a percentage of people who would, you know, in the history of going to Sixers games, there's always Lakers fans there. There's always Knicks fans there. Bulls, there's always Bulls fans there. There would be fans, but they have not given people the reason to say, I can't miss this. I have to be there and not just sell them. And when you're a season ticket holder, which I was for years, and I guarantee you season ticket holders got fucking pummeled this year because the Sixers did not do well selling tickets. You could see in the amount of times they were begging people to buy single game tickets. You get pummeled all year. You spend a ton of money on these fucking tickets. And then finally you get to the playoffs with a team that you probably don't believe in. And some schmuck from New York is willing to pay five times what face price is. And you just fucking take it. And I would not, like, the Sixers have not earned these people can't sell their tickets thing.
No, and the dread.
Yeah.
Permeating through the arena that something like this, whether it's like fucking inbounds passes, not going there, or just like brain dead turnovers, or in this case of today, not getting the fucking rebound over and over again, that it's going to keep punishing them. And it's a bummer because, God, they could have won that game even with all the other shit.
Yeah.
Because Lowry... grifts, and it did another, we didn't talk about Lowry much, but like some great grifting.
The one with Brunson on the ground.
The one with Brunson on the ground, hilarious. Drawing and away from the play foul, which is one shot, and the ball back, which gets it from the deficit from 5-4. If they score there, that's fucking two. And then the Knicks were missing free throws. The door was open. They were not playing a perfect game. And Embiid instead dribbles into... take a tougher shot for no reason, doesn't dunk over like a bunch of 6'8" guys, and they lose, but they still had a shot even with all the horrible
every game
play that is every game.
But again, that's a difference. Winners win these games, losers don't. So if the Sixers want to be winners, they got to win the close games. You know, like this is what the playoffs are. It's the difference between moving on and not moving on. And that is the sort of analysis that you come to this podcast for. So I do not feel dead, and I will not feel dead until they're dead. But they are on the brink, man. They're definitely on the brink.
It's just really, really incredibly frustrating and just like a gut punch after gut punch way to lose games by the other team clearly getting after it more. I think the like wanting it more is not like a waters I want to wade into, but as far as like activity, energy, focus, athleticism, speed, physicality, strength, like toughness, like in those little moments here and there, like watching Josh Hart out tough Tobias like 45 times this game just to be the first one to get to a ball just because he fucking is there and is a step ahead mentally and physically is a brutal way to lose a game over and over again. It makes you want to, like I said this in the last podcast or one of them, I was like, the Knicks are just like so easily the more fun team to root for. You'd rather root for the team that are fucking just making you, like, embarrassing you physicality, having you on your heels, like stealing extra possessions. Like that's the good shit. That's why I like B-ball so much, is when he gets those extra possessions, that is a demoralizing way to lose and to lose those like little battles within games. And the Sixers this series have lost those battles so many times. And you know, Maxi hitting those shots and Embiid hitting those shots has kept the games closer than they could have been. But man, It's not a fun way to get like totally sunned by a team that has at least worse top line talent than you do.
Yeah.
For sure. Then the top line talent's got to play to make up for what they are missing in the things that you have brought up. Their top line talent has to be better than they were in this game.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help when one fucking top line talent salary is going to Tobias Harris.
For sure. Of course. But he's not even there anymore. But to me and to our friend campaign, like, energy costs nothing. And sometimes the Sixers were just the less energetic team.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Didn't have it.
And honestly, for the first time, I don't blame it on Embiid. I think they follow him generally, but I don't think that this was one of those games. We've seen those games. I don't see this as one of those games where he brought bad energy into the game.
No.
And he made
mistakes. I have things to criticize him for, but it wasn't like the first Miami game. Obviously, we now know that he's been dealing with Bell's palsy and had migraines and stuff. And that's obviously incredibly difficult to play through, but he's playing his ass off and he's still keeping them alive in the games. And his plus minus through the series is still very positive. And it's obviously they can't survive just every other iteration of the team. They can't survive the minutes without him. Yeah, it sucks, man. It sucks. It sucks to be here again.
We will see you after the game on Tuesday night, which will either be a game where I am convincing everybody that we can win the series after we've won, or we will have another season over into another fucking off season where we convince ourselves that it is going to change everything. So,
19 points off of offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter for the Knicks.
It's crazy. But there was one possession where I think they got 14 offensive rebounds. One specific possession. I have never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like it.
If you don't fuck with me.
All right. We will see you.
And I won't fuck with you.
Anything else?
No.
If you don't fuck with me.
We'll see you Tuesday night. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know, like this.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
Then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for plan B.